Son of Fletch by Gregory MacDonald. Copyright 1993 by Gregory MacDonald. This recording of the full-length reading of Son of Fletch was published by arrangement with Gelfman Schneider Literary Agents Incorporated and was produced in 1994 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape Incorporated. This book is read by Grover Gardner. Please observe the following procedures as you listen to these tapes. If you have borrowed this book from your local library, please return it to them at the end of the agreed period. If you are one of our regular rental customers, you may keep your book for 30 days from date of receipt by you, but after that time, we charge additional rental of 25 cents per day. Dates are checked by postmark. Please return this book at the earliest possible time so another subscriber can have the use of this recording. To return cassettes to us, simply make sure they are all packaged in their plastic cassette cases and in proper order in the mailing container. Kindly seal the mailing container for return. Postage is already paid. Drop in any mailbox for return to Books on Tape. Should a cassette fail to play properly, hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard flat surface. If this does not work, or if you cannot otherwise free the reels, and if you are a library customer, please ask your local library to contact Books on Tape for a replacement cassette. If you are one of our rental customers, please call us at our regular customer service number. Give us the name of the book and number of the cassette. We will immediately send you a replacement at no charge. Discard the broken cassette. Son of Fletch by Gregory MacDonald. This book consists of 24 chapters and is 236 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. The long-awaited return of the most beloved bad boy of detective fiction, Fletch is back. Cool, quirky, and quicker with a quip than a gun, the irrepressible Fletch is back in action. Hailed by the New York Times as one of the best writers we have, back-to-back Edgar Award winner Gregory MacDonald now returns to the mystery series that started it all. As millions of Fletch fans already know, when it comes to crime-solving and wisecracking, Fletch has never been thrown a curve he cannot handle. But now, after 9 books in the best-selling series as well as 2 feature film adventures, Fletch faces the most difficult challenge of his career. When a young man comes calling under the most irregular of circumstances, even the unflappable Fletch is thrown for a loop. Like frogs falling from trees in a hard southern rain, the boy one day appears at Fletch's barnyard door, and to complicate matters considerably, he's claiming to be Fletch's son. Given that the young stranger is sporting prison garb, that there has just been a jailbreak in the vicinity, and that he is traveling in the company of a man who takes pride in spouting unconscionable sentiments of white supremacist hate, Fletch reserves judgment before handing out any cigars. Yet as a reporter who has lived his life by the credo that we are all mysteries awaiting solution, Fletch realizes he has no choice but to sign on for what promises to be the most tumultuous ride of his life. Here is Fletch as you've never seen him before. Older, wiser, but with his notoriously reckless sense of humor very much intact. Son of Fletch guarantees a new generation of first-rate detection, rollicking wit, and sheer page-turning suspense. Gregory MacDonald is the author of 21 books, including 9 Fletch novels and 3 Flynn mysteries. For his Fletch novels, he has twice won the Mystery Writers of America's prestigious Edgar Award for Best Mystery, the only mystery writer to have been so honored. He lives in Tennessee. Chapter 1. Mr. Fletcher? In the hard rain, Fletch had stopped the jeep at the roadblock on the narrow county road. It was raining so hard he and Carrie had almost failed to see the sputtering warning flares as they came down the twisting, rock-walled road through the gap. When the jeep was stopped in front of the 2 county police cars, parked as a wedge facing them, their headlights lit, a great bulk of a man wearing a yellow slicker, dark, wide-brimmed hat lumbered toward them. He was lit by the jeep's headlights, but more backlit by the high beams of the police cars. Ha, Carrie had said. Fletch, I told you not to leave your popcorn bucket on the floor of the movie theater. They're out looking for you, now they've cotched you, and they'll put you under the jailhouse for sure. Who's that? Fletch asked. The rain pounding on the canvas roof of the Jeep made them speak loudly.
"Rondi," Carrie answered. "You know him. His uncle's Biggie Wilson. You've been hunting with him that time you all treed the Carter boy because he has a natural smell of possum."
Fletch opened the Jeep's door, as that was easier than unzippering the window.
"Hiya, Rondi. How's your Uncle Big Stuff?"
"He's just fine, Mr. Fletcher."
Rondi flashed his light around the interior of the Jeep. He leaned to look directly behind their seats.
"Evening, Carrie. You folks doing all right?"
Carrie said, "Happier than worms wriggling in warm mud." Rain was pouring off the brim of the deputy's hat.
"Plenty of warm mud around."
"What's happening, Rondi?"
Carrie leaned forward in the passenger seat and spoke across Fletch.
"The sheriff misplaced his spectacles again?"
"Some villains decided to take themselves a little vacation from the federal penitentiary up in Kentucky, Carrie."
"Can't blame them," Fletch said.
"We've been advertising Tennessee as a vacation spot. Take yourselves off to Tennessee, isn't that the slogan?"
"We've been told to welcome tourists all right, Mr. Fletcher. It's just that we're concerned these particular fellows, being wards of the government, a federal responsibility, might stay out so late they just might miss their breakfasts."
"Can't let that happen."
"No, sir. They left home without any pocket money is what has us worried."
Fletch smiled. "Armed and dangerous?"
"We don't know if they're armed yet. If not, they sure will be soon enough. Dangerous for sure."
Also dressed in yellow slickers, wide-brimmed hat, black rubber boots, carrying a flashlight, Sheriff Rogers came up and joined Deputy Wilson at the Jeep store. The jeans on Fletcher's left leg were getting soaked.
"Miss Fletcher, Miss Carrie."
"Howdy, Sheriff," Carrie said. "Don't Francie let you take a shower bath at home anymore?"
"Says I keep leaving wet towels on the bathroom floor. So she sends me out every time there's a hard rain. She's been complaining about wet towels on the floor 32 years now."
The sheriff grinned. "Funny how some women never change."
"Nor should we," sniffed Carrie.
"How long since you all been gone from the farm?"
"Few hours," Fletch answered. "Went to St. Ives, had supper, saw a movie. Left home about, what, 5:15?
"You got guns at home, Mr. Fletcher?"
"Sure."
"Anywhere an intruder could find them?"
"Sure."
"Loaded?"
"No, the shells and cartridges are kept separate."
"That's good. Maybe we should send Rondi here home with you."
Rondi frowned at the little space in the back of the Jeep.
"We'll be all right. How many villains are you looking for tonight?"
"Four."
The sheriff fished a wet piece of paper out of his pocket and held his flashlight on it under the Jeep's roof.
"One murderer, one attempted murderer, one kidnapper, and one serving heavy time on drug charges."
"Shoot," Fletch said. "I thought Rondi said these were bad dudes. You have their names there?"
Rainwater ran down the sheriff's face, despite his wide-brimmed hat.
"Kriegel, Fayoni, Leary, and Moreno."
The sheriff accented the first syllable of the last name. Putting the paper back into his pocket, he said,
"Can't figure why they're coming through here."
"Headed south, I suppose," Fletch said.
"Alabama border, lose themselves in Florida." "Except they've drifted sideways," the sheriff said. "This isn't a direct route to anywhere for them, far as I can figure."
"How do you know they're here?"
"Told they were coming this way for sure. Then Ms. Mobley spotted them running along the ridge just before sunset."
The sheriff waved toward the west.
"Guess we can believe her, all right."
In her 60s, Marianne Mobley was considered the sharpest-eyed hunter in the county.
"Couldn't get to him, of course, in all his dampness."
The sheriff craned to look at the Jeep's shifts.
"This a four-wheel drive, Fletch?"
"Yes, sir."
"Mind if we borrow your Jeep, Fletch? We'll start by patrolling your farm."
"Not at all. You're welcome to it."
"Trouble is, I really need Rondahl here. They're just the two of us, two cars. Maybe I'll radio in and have a couple of deputies stop by your farm on their way out from town. They can pick up your Jeep, patrol your farm, then come find us."
"That'll be fine."
"Got gas?"
"Filled up in St. Ives."
"We'll appreciate it."
"So will I."
Fletch put the Jeep in first gear.
"Be real careful going into your place. Unless they're traveling faster than they have been, There's a large chance they're down there somewhere near or on your farm. Sorry I can't spare Rondi to go with you. We'll be fine. Not to worry. Fletch closed the Jeep's door. Slowly he drove between the blinding headlights of the police cars. Already, Carrie was picking her fingers.
Well, I'm worried a little bit.
About what? Fletch asked. Carrie looked toward her rain-streaked plastic window.
Four villains peeking out of the bushes at us,
Fletch said. Around here we've got coyotes, wolves, bobcats, panthers, and snakes.
And a bear.
Carrie insisted she ran into a bear between the barns one dark night. She hadn't lingered to collect evidence it really was a bear.
You're not all that afraid of snakes, bobcats, and bears, are you?
Animals make sense, Fletch, Carrie said. It's the humans you can't trust worth a patootie.
Should I stay here?
Absolutely not. Using the four-wheel drive, Fletch had driven up the old dirt timber road at the back of the farm. Lights out, he drove along the top of the hill behind the farmhouse. He stopped just inside the edge of the woods. These dudes want the Jeep, and they want you. I'd rather you stay with me.
You don't care as much about the Jeep?
Not as much. I'm going to let the counties use it, aren't I? A few months before, two of the county's cars had smashed into each other in a parking lot. In the hard rain, they walked together down the hill just inside the line of trees. Even though they were slipping and sliding on the wet hillside, Carrie took his hand.
Maybe the bobcats will get him, she said. Maybe that panther you saw the other night will tear him apart like lettuce leaves.
If you don't hush, Fletch said, we might as well be driving up the driveway, honking the horn, and going in the side door singing Three Coins in a Bar Room.
First time I thought kindly of rattlesnakes, Carrie said.
When they got just above the house, Fletch said, you might stay here now. Give me time to case the joint.
Here? This is about the place we saw the black wolf go into the woods last fall.
You think he's still here?
Might could be.
There's plenty for a wolf to eat out here without taking a snack out of you. It's the hungry two-legged variety who think food only grows in refrigerators we need to worry about right now.
I don't have a gun, Carrie said. What do I do if the wolf comes by?
What you charming Tennesseans always do.
What's that? Say, howdy, Mr. Wolf, how's your paw?
Which paw will I be asking about in this case? Right, left, front, back? If you hush your mouth, at least the humans won't know you're here. He climbed over the whiteboard fence. Crouching, he circumnavigated the house. He peered through the windows into every room on the first floor. Throughout the house, there were baseboard safety lights. Behind the house, he opened the door to the smokehouse. In the dark, rain pounding on the aluminum roof, he found the pipe end, about 6 inches long, an inch wide, he had left there that afternoon after making a repair in the pump house. He placed the white PVC pipe on the walk leading from the side of the house to the barns, just outside the study. It would be visible on the path once the lights in the study were lit. Then he entered the house through the back door, went from room to room and upstairs, turning on lights. He took the handgun from his bathroom closet and loaded it. There was no sensible place to carry it in his sopping shirt and jeans, so he kept it in his right hand. Openly, he went back across the backyard in the rain. Okay, he said quietly over the fence. You can come out now. All ye home be.
I'm not here.
Oh? He could not see her in the dark woods.
A panther carried me off by the foot, all you care.
Wet blonde hair streaming down her face, she climbed over the fence. No sign they've even been here. Even the porridge hasn't been touched.
Long as they leave my pickled beets alone.
In the kitchen, Carrie said, me for a shower, a warm shower. You too? Guess I'll wait until you're finished.
Will you come upstairs with me?
There are no panthers upstairs. I already looked. He got a can of tuna fish out of the cupboard. She asked, you hungry?
No.
Come to think of it, let me go upstairs for the shotgun. Then I'd like you to go into the living room, turn out the lights, and wait for me.
Oh.
Wet and cold, she shivered.
The Jeep.
Leaving Carrie standing alone with a loaded shotgun in a corner of the dark living room, Fletch jogged up the slippery hill.
There was no question whatsoever in his mind that if she were confronted with an intruder, Carrie would not only shoot, she would shoot as well as she normally did, which was very well indeed. Without a blink of hesitation, if armed, calmly, she would blow the head off anyone who messed with her or hers. In his years in the southern part of the United States, Fletch had come to know and respect the southern countrywoman considerably in this way. Distinctly, Carrie was a southern countrywoman. Thinking it would be safer, Fletch drove the Jeep back along the timber road, down to the hardtop road, down it to the driveway, and up it. He left the Jeep in the carport with the truck and the station wagon. In the dining room, he said into the dark living room, "If you don't shoot me, just maybe I'll live to give you a kiss." "What will you give me if I do shoot you?" "The job of having to dig a big hole somewhere." "Are you alone?" The intelligence of the question impressed him. "Except for Zsa Zsa and Fifi." "Don't joke." "I'm alone," Fletch said. "Prove it." "All escaped convicts are chickens." "Okay." In the bedroom, staying nearer to the door to the house than to the bathroom door so he could hear over the sound of the shower, Fletch pulled off his boots and his wet clothes. He put on his bathrobe. "All done." Carrie came out of the bathroom with a towel wrapped around her head. "Are you going to use the hair dryer?"
"I have to."
"I'll wait." When she was done, he left her in the bedroom with the handgun and took a quick warm shower himself.
"Okay."
He put the shotgun on the floor next to Carrie's side of the bed, away from the bedroom door. "Is this good for you?"
"Fine."
He changed into fresh jeans, shirt, and running shoes. "I'll be downstairs."
"Are you going to sit up all night?"
"Maybe." In the kitchen, he picked up the phone and listened. He tried a few numbers. The phone was dead. He mixed the tuna fish with chopped onion, celery, and mayonnaise. He'd lightly toasted two pieces of bread. He put the light toast on a plate, heaped the tuna mix on the toast, and spread Swiss cheese on the tuna. He put the plate into the oven. He did not turn on the oven. Then he went into the study. He opened the French door behind his desk. With his back to the door, he sat at his desk, apparently relaxed. He slid the handgun under some loose papers on his desk. Outside, the storm raged. The rain was deafening. The wind moved a paper on his desk. After the warm day, the breeze cooled off the study quickly. Fletch did not have long to wait. It was only a few minutes when he felt the small round object pressed just below his left ear. A voice behind him said, "Don't move." Fletch said, "Howdy, son. How's your ma?" Chapter 2. Careful not to move, Fletch said, "Son, put down that PVC. He chuckled. Behind him, a young man's voice asked, "What's a PVC? "In this instance," Fletch answered, "I mean that piece of white plastic pipe, 6 inches long, 1 inch in diameter, you're holding in your left hand." Fletch continued to feel the pressure against his head, behind, below his left ear. The voice said, "It's a gun barrel." "Couldn't shoot a dried pea 2 meters with that barrel if your name was Louis Armstrong." The young man was breathing somewhat heavily. "You don't know it's not a gun. How do you know it's not a gun?" "Because I didn't leave a gun for you to find on the path. I left you a piece of pipe to find."
"You left it for me to find?"
"Oh, yes. And then made the light from the study window shine on it. Anything to instill confidence in the younger generation, encourage family visitations." The young man behind Fletch took 3 more fairly deep breaths.
"You know I'm your son?"
"Not yet." After a few seconds, the pressure against Fletch's head stopped. Fletch asked, "Seeing I'm sitting and you're standing behind me and therefore have the advantage, I ask you, may I move, please?"
"To do what?"
"To look at you. I'm mildly curious."
"About what?"
"To see what crystal hath wrought."
"Crystal?"
the young man's voice said.
"Your mother. Crystal. Crystal Faoni is your mother, isn't she?"
After a deep breath, the voice said,
"Okay."
Fletch swiveled slowly around in his desk chair. Simultaneously, the young man turned around to face the far wall.
At first, Fletch saw only the back of a soaking wet lean male in his early 20s. The back of his denim shirt had stitched on it, Federal Penitentiary, Thomaston. Fletch tisked.
You kids, you can't wear anything without some sort of an advertisement or a slogan on it. Wouldn't the usual beer logo or Yale do just as well?
The young man stuck the piece of pipe into the back pocket of his wet jeans. With his foot, Fletch slid the metal wastebasket from under his desk. Apparently identifying the noise accurately, the young man turned. With a quick grin and a glance at Fletch, he dropped the pipe into the basket.
You have your mother's eyes, Fletch said.
She says the rest of me is pure you.
Poor you. Your boots are messing up the floor.
Up to their high top laces, they were covered with mud, manure, bits of hay.
I always heard that father types say things like that.
Take them off, right where you are. Fletch tapped his foot against the side of the wastebasket. You're not in a jailhouse now. No free labor here.
Standing on one foot, then the other, the young man removed one boot, filthy wet white sock, dropped them in the wastebasket, then the other boot and sock. He asked,
couldn't you say hello first? How are you? How's your life been?
You like tuna puffs?
What's a tuna puff?
I like them, your age. Still do. Warm food.
I like warm food.
Passing between the young man and the desk, Fletch went into the study bathroom. He returned with two towels. One he handed to the young man. The other he dropped on the mess the young man's boots had made on the wood floor. He stirred the towel around with his foot.
What's your name? Fletch asked.
John.
Faoni?
John Fletcher Faoni.
True.
Too true.
What do people call you?
Jack.
Oh.
Sometimes I say my name is Fletch.
Oh, that sounds more familiar.
Fletch Faoni. Lots of people are called Jack.
Gee. And all this time I thought Crystal liked my first names.
Irwin Maurice, Jack blurted.
Crouching on bent knees, Fletch finished cleaning up the mess on the floor. He picked up the towel and turned it over.
Would you believe I didn't know you exist?
I know you didn't. Mother didn't want you to.
Fletch looked up at the barefoot boy with cheeks wet with rain. Without using the towel, Jack had just hung it around his neck.
Why not?
Said I was none of your business. Shouldn't be a burden to you.
You didn't ask for me. She conned you and trapped you or something. Way she tells it, she virtually had me by artificial insemination.
Not quite. Although I think she would have had you by parthenogenesis if she could have.
Jack did not ask what parthenogenesis meant.
Still crouching, wet, filthy towel in hand, Fletch continued to look up at the young man, who had not moved back or away, across the room, who remained standing closer to Fletch than normal, as if to sense him. Jack's hair was curled with rain and mud. His face was streaked by dirt and dried sweat, especially in his day-old, two-day-old light beard. He smelled of outdoors, rain, sweat, trees, hay, exertion. Fletch said, "We made love only once."
She's told me you were both naked on a bathroom floor struggling to free yourselves from a shower curtain you had fallen through or some such ridiculous thing. And so I got born.
That's about right, Fletch smiled.
And trapped in a shower curtain.
Something like that.
But she didn't exactly entrap me. We were at a journalism convention at Hendrix's plantation in Virginia. In fact, if I remember correctly, I entered the shower voluntarily. Of course, it was my shower, and I can't remember how she happened to be in it. What's more, it was a real case of coitus interruptus. I mean, after being interrupted by a third person, we both did return our attentions back to what apparently turned out to be your conception. She must have timed the occasion perfectly. It wasn't until later that I realized Crystal was trying to get pregnant. By me. Crystal always was good at timing things.
How did you feel about that?
I was complimented.
Did you love her at all?
Oh, yes. Crystal was charming, brilliant, witty, thoughtful, perceptive, loving, with gorgeous skin and eyes. She could have been a great beauty.
Except she probably weighed a ton and a half.
She felt she had a weight problem, yes.
Does she still?
She weighs about right, Jack said. If only she were 14 feet tall.
I think she hadn't many lovers.
From what she told me, Jack said, Mother made love only twice in her life. Once to you and once long before to a man named Shapiro.
Oh, yes, I remember now. That's how I figured out what she was doing. She had attempted this selective breeding once before.
And was she terribly fat even then?
Corpulent. Fletch dumped the dirty wet towel into the wastebasket. He stood up.
Trouble with Crystal was that she thought she was unattractive. She told everybody she was unattractive all the time. So most people saw her as unattractive.
Jack said, You did what you did without forethought.
You're well spoken.
Yes, without much forethought, but I could have done something else.
I'm glad you didn't.
Fletch cut his eyes to read the young man's face.
Are you?
Oh, yes.
Did I make a mistake?
Finally, the young man stepped into the middle of the room. His eyes scanned the light switches.
Do the lights in this house go on automatically?
Why do you ask?
Because the lights went on one by one. 15 minutes later, you came down the road in the Jeep by yourself. What, do you have some kind of a radio switch in the Jeep?
Fletch asked.
In which barn are your traveling companions?
The young man hesitated.
The one further from here.
Do they smoke? Do they have matches, lighters?
They don't smoke. I don't know if they have lighters.
If they have matches, they're probably soaked and useless.
How do you know about them, my traveling companions? Why do you call them that?
I met the sheriff on the way home. There are roadblocks up. They're looking for you.
Oh, and the sheriff mentioned the name Fayoni to you?
Kriegel, Fayoni, Leary, Moreno.
Which one are you?
What do you mean?
The murderer, the attempted murderer, the kidnapper, or the drug grocer?
Attempted murder.
I see.
The young man stood very straight.
I'm asking you if you are alone in the house. I know there was no one in the house before you arrived.
You're trying to tell me you've got big, tough friends outside.
Yeah.
Fletch moved some of the papers on his desk, revealing the handgun. He picked it up and put it in his belt. You saw me arrive alone.
The young man raised his chin a little.
Still, he seemed to be sniffing Fletch warily.
Yes?
The barns are the first places the cops will look for you and your traveling companions. As kids, they hid in barns themselves.
Jack said nothing.
Pointing, Fletch said, Uphill of the back barn to the left, about 150 meters, is a deep gully. There's all kind of junk, trees, old barbed wire, fence posts, whatever thrown in that gully, as somebody's idea of a means to prevent erosion. In a storm like this, shortly, if not already, water will come streaming hard down that gully. I'm certain the cops will not go into that gully.
They will not go into that gully, Fletch knew, because as kids they learned that's one of the places where the snakes are.
He asked Jack, Do you want to help your traveling companions escape?
Jack said, Yes.
Then go lead them up to the gully, tell them to hunker down in it and to stay there until further notice.
Further notice will come, Fletch continued in his own mind, after your traveling companions have been thoroughly exhausted, terrified by snakes, and beaten up by rushing water, beating them against trees, fence posts, and coils of rusty barbed wire.